from the Sky News Centre at 6. A con man with dozens of previous convictions over more than 30 years has been jailed after lying about his family dying in the Grenfell Tower fire. A Nu Nguyen received about £12,000 from charities and the local council and described to media about how he escaped the smoke and flames. The 53-year-old's been sentenced to 21 months at Southwark Crown Court. Here's Detective Chief Inspector Matt Bonner.
The most significant part of the sentencing was that real recognition was given to those that lost family members and those that have been so greatly affected by the tragedy last year.
There are calls for two British Islamic State fighters recently captured in Syria to be put on trial instead of being shipped to Guantanamo Bay. US officials have interrogated the extremists, who were part of a group which tortured and beheaded more than two dozen hostages. But security expert Anthony Glees says it's now important American officials give victims' families the justice they deserve.
I think there will be strong voices saying, no, The Hague, this is an international matter. Let an international court deal with it.
A pre-inquest hearing's been told the man who killed 8 people in the London Bridge and Borough Market attacks had taken steroids. 3 terrorists ploughed into pedestrians in a van before stabbing people. Police then shot them. The Brexit Secretary David Davis says he's surprised by the EU's chief negotiator, who insists a transition deal is not a given. Michel Barnier has delivered a blunt assessment of the current talks, but David Davis insists the UK's position is very clear. London and Amsterdam are getting a new rail link. The Eurostar service will begin in April. Return trains will initially run through Brussels, while British and Dutch authorities work on an agreement for passport checks. That's the latest. I'm Barry Weir.
Hello and welcome along, boys and girls. It's the unmistakable sound of the Friday politics with me, Billy Quain, keeping Tony Gosling's seat warm this week. It's a not quite politics-free zone on the politics show this week. We're going to be talking transport solutions with Rail Futures' Bruce Williamson. Old Labour economist Martin Summers is in the studio with me. He's going to be discussing borrowing plans to pay for Bristol's new tram system. £4.5 billion of Chinese money, apparently, according to our glorious mayor. And just before 7 o'clock, we're going to be joined in the studio by Annika Sutcliffe, Green Party activist and campaigner, on all things young, green and good for the future of the planet. Weather for the week ahead. It is partly cloudy and breezy this evening with lows of 0 degrees Celsius. Tomorrow, rain, but the temperatures pick up, maximum of 10. Sunshine and showers on Sunday, and it returns to chilly with hail and occasionally wintry outbreaks for the remainder of the week. It doesn't sound great for half term. I'm sorry about that. But unfortunately, these things sometimes happen. On the roads around Bristol, it's busy, busy, busy out there. I was getting nowhere so slowly, I had to ditch the car at the Eastern Leisure Centre and walk across to where we are at the Eastern Community Centre. So, yes, traffic isn't great. Both directions, the A370 at Huish in Somerset is closed. That's 4 miles south of Clevedon. Banwell, the A368, Towerhead Road in both directions in Somerset. Not good. Whitchurch, the A37 in both directions. Very slow on the A37 between Church Road and Staunton Lane and Norton Lane. There are roadworks in the area. And at Down End, this is updated 3 minutes ago. Heavy traffic on the A4174. Ring Road at the Bromley Heath roundabout. There are also roadworks in the area there. Congresbury, the B1 3133. Both directions very slow again between Kongsbury and the A38. The A38 at Lower Langford. If you would like to contact me this evening and let me know what the traffic is doing where you are, then send me a text message. 60777 is the number to send it to. Start it with BCFM. It will come straight through to me in the studio. You can send me emails to studio@bcfmradio.com, or indeed you can send me tweets at @BCFMRadio. Now, welcoming Bruce Williamson from Rail Futures and Martin Summers to the studio. Good week, bad week, gentlemen.
Not much has happened on the transport front, really, other than, you've alluded to Marvin's plan for a metro system around the around Bristol.
Yes, exciting times, because they're now talking about not only sticking the tram on the Bristol and Bath cycle path, mm-hmm. which was previously a railway track, which is why it makes such a good cycle path. And even in December, Sostrans have released statistics saying 3,800 people are using it every day to bicycle and walk places, which creates no green emissions.
True, but then neither does trains. No, they don't. You know, green powered trains, Network Rail gets all its electricity from green sources. Electric trains don't pollute at all. And of course, the advantage of trains, and this is, I suppose, the key point, rail based vehicles, whether it's trains or trams, no other form of transport can attract people out of their cars. So if you want to reduce cars, if you want to reduce pollution, the only way to get modal shift, as we call it in the trade, is to provide an alternative that travels by train or by rail.
Interesting. Martin Summers, how long have you been hearing this trope and nothing being done about it?
Well, I mean, we've been hearing it for a long time. I mean, I remember John Prescott talking about a joined up transport policy back in the New Labour days, and nothing was done, nothing happened. And Bristol has a reputation of being sort of green thinking, but it's still got some of the worst traffic in the country, despite everybody being so green. So it's easy to be cynical, isn't it?
I'm afraid so, because, you know, we had Lib Dem councillor, formerly of Cabot, now of Hotwells and Harbourside. Mark Wright was in the studio with us last week, and he said when the coalition government was elected in 2010, the green light had already been given to the £200 million for Metrobus. And 2 years into that government, they said, you can actually change that money to a tram now if you want. And that was before any ground had been broken on Metrobus. So, Bruce Williamson, why didn't the council and the associated authorities go for a tram at that point?
God only knows. It is idiocy of the highest order. And, you know, what we're seeing is this Metrobus, which will be a white elephant. And it's, you know, the costs keep escalating, keep spiralling. And because of sort of saving face, it will work, it will run, and it will run for a few years until they realise the error of their ways, and after a while say, oh yes, no, now we've considered the facts, you know, experience, the situation's changed, now we think a tram is the way forward. Tram is the only way forward, or rail-based transport is the only way forward. We've seen, you know, these guided buses, these busways, they just don't work. They don't work in the sense that they don't attract passengers, they don't achieve that modal shift. And even by the councils or the promoters of this scheme's own figures, it's going to make an absolutely negligible impact on traffic in the city. So that's the most optimistic forecast. It's going to make no difference at all. The most pessimistic forecast is it's going to cost billions of pounds and make no difference at all, possibly even make things worse.
Well, what's the consensus within the transport pressure groups in the southwest and, you know, more local to Bristol? Mm. Because frankly, the city has been in chaos for the last 6 years with digging holes and making space for a transport link network to bring the neats from South Bristol up to the highly paid aerospace jobs at Filton.
Yeah, I think it's more of a political issue than a transport issue, in the sense that, you know, the deal has been done, they've got to save face, they've got to sort of stick with it, they've got to go through with it now. You know, they couldn't risk the political embarrassment of abandoning it now, even though common sense would actually say it's still a very, very bad idea. So Marvin comes up with this idea, and, you know, he's got a lot of mockery for it, but he does have some, you know, some sense behind it. He wants to link up the airport by rail, which actually is a fairly sound idea in itself.
But for the fact that, you know, the airport is up on the edge of the Mendips, it's at quite high altitude.
Yeah, you do have a problem with the gradient. Railways aren't brilliant at going up steep hills, but it can be done, particularly trams. Trams actually can go up quite steep hills. And you could do something where you had an underground station at the airport and that alleviated the thing. But, you know, either way, it's doable. It would cost quite a lot of money. And crucially, where I think Marvin has seen the error of his ways of late is building it underground. The whole railway underground is monstrously expensive. And that really, you know, I think is what makes life difficult. You know, where possible, that rail lines need to go overground, because it's much more feasible and much more economical to do that. Hence why, even though I think the... because it's been controversial of late, even though the City Council and the West of England Authority or whoever's behind it won't say we want to use the Bristol and Bath Railway path, I think they do. It's pretty obvious they do, because that's the only realistic option.
Okay. Martin, you're an old Labour economist of the halcyon days of the three-day week. Labour has four MPs in Bristol at the moment. They have a controlling majority at the council. They have a Labour mayor. We keep being told, oh, there's no money. The public toilets were closed last week, saving an alleged £400,000 a year. They're talking about closing 22 libraries. And now, with the other hand, they're talking about spending £4.5 billion of borrowed money on a transport solution, which they did three quarters of with the Metro bus.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not necessarily going to defend the position of the Labour Council on this. I don't really know enough about the detail, to be honest with you. I think we do need infrastructure spending on transport. I mean, that's what we need to do. When people say there's no money for the council, because the money for the council is being cut by central government.
Well, so, apparently that's only £200 million since 2010, with a finish date of 2020. So when you percolate those figures down, that's £20 million of savings a year, which for an organisation the size of Bristol City Council should be achievable.
Yeah, but the point is you shouldn't really be cutting back at all from an economic point of view. You need to be investing. And, we could argue about the macroeconomics of whether you should be spending or not. That's a bigger question. But local government's just caught in the slipstream of those bigger questions. But I think it is interesting that the mayor, as an elected mayor, is going out with these kind of big ticket projects, which are going to be funded from who knows where, because he can't actually deliver the stuff that councils are supposed to be delivering, like toilets and bin collection and so on.
So, do we think this is diversionary tactics? He's just come.
Well, I think it's to do with the mayoral system, because mayors are sort of pop stars, celebrities. They have to come up with something which is eye catching, what have you, and therefore we can't. You know, and of course it does sound a bit bizarre that we've got all these kind of huge infrastructure projects, dreaming, visionary stuff at the same time as we're closing toilets. You know, you can see what the as you've picked up on, Billy, the gap there. Well, the credibility gap.
I'm just wondering if the closing the toilets is a ruse to start fining people heavily for doing number ones, or dare I say it, number twos in public, and generating revenue that way.
Hard to imagine they generate £400,000, though, would they?
From poo.
It depends how many people you find, you know.
There's people chasing litter up, isn't there? Because we've had some questions in previous weeks about the litter police, you know, threatening people and so on.
Well, there's the litter police, and a good one that I came across on Facebook, which apparently the council has rolled back on very quickly and quietly, is the park wardens, the outsourced park wardens sitting in their van on the fringes of Redland Green, where the well-heeled take their nicely primped dogs for a quick walk, and the minute they step off a certain part of the green, they get slapped with a £70 your dog's not under control fine. And that, you know,
that could be revenue raising,
think possibly the outsourcing to that company was maybe to keep an eye on dangerous dogs in Lawrence Weston or Withywood or Hardcliffe, instead of actually targeting the well-heeled in the higher council tax band areas of the city.
Well, I think possibly that you know there could be some class warfare aspects to this, but it may just be that they don't forget it's an outsourced company. They probably get more money the more people they arrest and chase up. You know, that's what it's about.
Well, it's probably much easier picking on little old ladies in Redland than it is.
Well,
chasing
indeed, yeah, you don't want to have somebody with a dangerous dog in Hartcliffe and all of his mates. Friend. You know,
no, exactly. When that's your actual brief. Okay, we won't go too far down that because apparently the council did roll back quite quickly on that one.
Right.
But if you have a story of horror, wit or woe that you'd like to share with us, do drop us a line, studio@bcfmradio.com. We're going to be back talking about actual practical solutions. It's the Friday Politics here on Bristol Community 93.2 FM across the city of Bristol and worldwide on bcfmradio.com. I'm Billy Quain, sitting in this week for Tony Gosling, and joining me in the studio, old Labour economist Martin Summers and Bruce Williamson from Transport Activisation Group. No, you're a transport consultant, I would nearly say.
I'll go with that.
Rail Futures.
Rail Future, yeah.
So, there are two proposals on the table at the moment that are blowing your skirt up, and you're not entirely pleased about either of them. Please,
no, I'm not. Okay.
Let's have some of the detail.
Well, let's talk about what we were just talking about now, the Bristol and Bath Rower Path, which is just on our doorstep here at the Euston Community Centre. And one of Marvin's proposals for a railway line is along the route of the Bristol and Bath Railway Path, and Sustrans have sort of started to object to this, you know, and you'd think that an organisation called Sustrans, Sustainable Transport, would support, you know, a sustainable transport proposal, because rail is one of the most sustainable and environmental transport, environmentally friendly forms of transport that there is. And their argument is that you know, the railway path can't sustain a track and a cycle path, but when actually clearly it can, because the evidence is that at Bitton, further down the line, they've done it. You have the steam railway and the cyclists happily sharing the path, and the original railway line was double track throughout its length, and so it's the same width here, just in, you know, in Bristol as it was out there. There may be one or two examples of incursions where, you know, but they can be dealt with. And, you know, cyclists are more flexible than trains. You know, you can divert a cycle path for a short period of its you know, duration with no trouble, which is much harder to do with, mm-hmm. with the railway. You know, and there's a solution out there which would leave everyone happy, but Sustrans, you know, they don't seem to see that. And there's evidence of this as well. We've seen it in the Borders Railway. They managed to put the railway back in and keep the cycle track in there. Similarly, the Cambridge Busway, which we weren't happy about for other reasons, but nonetheless, that's a railway line with a busway and a cycle track as well. So it's doable. The alternative, of course...
Well, the example that everyone's going to use is the trams in Edinburgh, which went monstrously over budget to cover what was already a very good bus network from the airport into the city centre. And there have been a number of fatalities, cyclist fatalities, on the tram line since it's opened.
Well, it's not surprising that people, you know, like to pick up on the unsuccessful example of a tram. I mean, I think, you know, Edinburgh Tram is successful, even though it was, you know, over budget and has been controversial and has been scaled back as well. But we have numerous other examples of trams that have been brought in. And the two really good examples are, well, there's three, is Manchester and Nottingham and Croydon. All of, despite the recent tragedy, nonetheless, tram remains a very, very safe form of transport. These schemes have been very, very successful. And here's the crucial point. Only rail-based transport can attract people out of cars. So, you know, if you want decent quality public transport that's actually going to make a difference, it has to be rail-based. So, you know, the guys, I saw this open letter from Chris, what's his name, from Sustrans. He says, we wholeheartedly support the idea of a metro line between Bristol and Bath. And then he goes on to say why he doesn't support it. Well, if you wholeheartedly support it, there's only one realistic option, which is on the Bristol and Bath cycle path. Underground is hideously expensive. And if you were going to build a tunnel underground, well, it would be cheaper to put the cyclists in the tunnel and let the trains go over the top. But somehow I reckon they wouldn't go for it.
Well, you know, probably less availability of vitamin D for the cyclists down in the tunnel, which isn't
same
going
applies
to
the tram passengers.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I hate to bring this up.
Yeah.
There is an extant railway line from the centre of Bristol to the centre of Bath,
yes.
which is vastly oversubscribed.
Well, there you go.
The infrastructure is there. Why are we not putting more carriages on that? Why are we not putting more trains on that?
Because we've pretty much reached capacity on that. And also, that rail line you just mentioned doesn't serve Mangersfield. You know, it serves, it's serving different parts of the suburbs of Bristol for a sort of commuter, a commuter route. So you, you know, you would pick up different customers, as you, as it were, from different parts of Bristol, mm-hmm. and bring them into and bring them to Bristol. I mean, between Edinburgh and Glasgow, for instance, there are three lines, all very busy. So the idea that there's one line and that's, you know, that's all you need, it doesn't quite make sense.
Okay, so let's do a little bit of blue sky hypothesizing now in the studio. They're alleged to be building a new motorway junction up at Emerson's Green for the technology park. An awful lot of new housing going in there.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make logic, as it's a it's a greenfield site, but it's still in the process of construction, wouldn't it be an idea to run something tramish, railish, sustainable-ish from there now?
It would be an excellent idea, Billy. Okay. But of course, the obvious route is the continuation of this Bristol to Bath railway park, path which went up to Mangersfields, crosses the M4 and joins it just this side of Yate. So, you know, there is actually a very strong case for reinstating that, that whole railway in long term. I think Network Rail want to do it. Mm-hmm. And it would serve that area that you described of northeast Bristol, you know, and provide an alternative to all this road building. Because, you know, the problem with road building, of course, is it just induces more traffic. It you know, solving congestion by building new roads, it's chasing rainbows. And it's amazing that the politicians still haven't seen that. You know, after it fails time and time and time again, and Einstein said the idea of idiocy is to do the same thing again and again and again, expect different results, you know. And yet politicians build roads, they become congested. The penny hasn't dropped yet. It doesn't work.
Okay, so let's continue the rail argument then. There was a lot of talk during Charlotte Leslie's tenure as Bristol North West MP of reopening the Henbury Loop, which would service the 7,000 new homes being built on Filton Airfield.
Yeah.
We may, if we get a chance, Martin Summers, touch on the sustainability of the British aerospace industry based at Filton without the means to get its product in or out once those houses are built, because that will touch on another issue I'm going to highlight with you, BAE's trading practices overseas with foreign states and the proliferation of BAE registered products ending up in war zones. But that's for later on. Let's talk about the Henbury Loop. 7,000 homes being built on an airfield. There is an extant railway line that runs parallel to this.
Yeah.
Which apparently isn't going to be made available for Transport Solutions getting the potential 20,000 new adult users and up to 40,000 under 18 users in or out of the city.
Yes, it's madness. It's very, very frustrating for a transport campaigner like me that you know, that these things, it just takes forever and it's so half-hearted and so many obstacles are placed in the way. But you're absolutely right. There is this freight line, the so-called Henbury Loop. In order to run passenger trains on it, you have to upgrade the signalling for safety reasons. And you have to build some stations. And you wouldn't believe how expensive it is just to build a platform. It's monstrous.
Well,
you know?
If it's anything like the $270 million it's cost to build a metro bus that nobody's going to use, then I can believe it.
It would be a bargain capacity. But I think it does cost something really ridiculous, like 10 million to open a station. God knows why. But yeah, so what's happening is that we're not getting the Henbury Loop, we're getting the Henbury Spur, which is, so if you can imagine going out on the Seven Beach line to Avonmouth, well, not quite to Avonmouth, and then turning north and going round towards Filton and then coming back into Bristol Temple Meads. That's the Henbury Loop. And we're not going to get the loop. We're going to get the spur. So trains will go out to Henbury and then come back again through Filton. And one day, hopefully, when the penny drops and the investment is available, then they'll bridge the gap, and you get this circular route, which makes so much more sense for improving connectivity and making the whole rail thing more viable. But it is bizarre that we're talking about, you know, we can't get the money for the Henbury Loop. We can't get the money to finish the Porteous Head job off. And yet, you know, Marvin's talking about, you know, three underground lines. So God knows where he's going to get the money from. And then also the madness of building roads. This is the other thing we were talking about earlier as well, which we haven't really talked about. It's the Brislington Greenway, or as it might also be otherwise known, the Callington Road Link. So,
hold your buttons on that. We're not getting onto that yet. I want to make sure that we finish in some detail.
Okay.
Why the Henbury Loop and the Portishead Line, which the lines are there.
Yeah.
We've been
yeah.
talking about this for yeah. 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, and the estimate, apparently, for the Portishead Line went recently from £60 million to get it up and running,
yeah.
with one extra station, I think, at Pill,
that's right.
to now £180 million because the trains can't go fast enough for humans.
Yeah, what? It's not quite. I mean, yes.
Do we need a guy with a red flag out in front
not
again?
Not quite, but it is, again, it's a signalling and safety thing. So the safety standards for freight trains aren't as high as the safety standards for passenger trains. And we want to run the passenger trains a little bit faster than we run the freight trains at the moment. And that means that they've discovered that there are some monstrous earthworks. I think there's some cliffs that need sort of tidying up or something so rocks don't fall on the railway or something mad like that. It's going to cost millions. So, as an interim measure, there will be, I think, an hourly service to Portishead, which will run at 30 miles an hour, which is not, you know, it's it doesn't sound very fast, but actually it's still a lot faster than taking a car during rush hour on the A369. And, it will prove the viability of the proposal overall, and then hopefully that people will see the light and other investment will become available. We found, in Rail Future that when it comes to, getting schemes off the ground, a sort of incremental approach seems to be more successful than a big bang. So we can't have it all at once, but little steps, little baby steps. So we haven't got the Henbury Loop, we've got the Henbury Spur, but maybe we'll get the Henbury Loop available. You know, we haven't got the full Portishead service, but maybe we'll get something up and running and so on. And then in the future, we can build on that and hopefully improve the service.
Okay, because Taylor Wimpey have, sold all the houses that they haven't quite finished, and they certainly haven't finished to a very high standard out on Filton Airfield.
Taylor Wimpey might have views on that.
They might have views, but, I would use the example of Sadly Broke from the early 1990s and reflect that straight back at them.
Mm.
Also, they have issued a number of profit warnings in the last 3 years, so
okay.
They were very, very lucky not to go the way Carillion went,
yeah.
if you want my personal opinion, which is not the opinion of BCFM management, I would like to say. And if, Taylor Wimpey, you would like to take me to court to disprove my hypothesis, then by all means, I would entertain very much seeing you in the dock.
But there is another point about railway in relation to housing. Of course, if you have a reopened line or a reopened station, that increases the value of your property. And Martin, you may want to come on to about land value tax and so on, because everyone benefits from the railway, even if you're not a passenger using it. If you live nearby, then it has a boosting effect on the local economy. So Taylor Wimpey, hopefully, will be...
Well, my point is, they've built the homes now.
Yeah.
When can we expect a station that's going to service these homes?
I don't have an answer to that. That's the thing,
Well, the line is there.
Yes, I know. But as I said, we're going to get the Henbury Spur
yeah.
is happening, and the Henbury station will happening. When is the full loop service? I don't know.
Okay, but presumably the Spur is going to go, to Henbury.
Yes, yes.
Which is kind of running alongside where all the new houses are going.
Yeah, yeah.
On the airfield.
Yeah. I think I can't give you an exact date, but I think it's in the pipeline, and it will be within our lifetimes, I hope.
Bless. Okay, no, I'm playing this especially for all the cyclists that are going to be starved of vitamin D when they're put in tunnels. It's the Bad Shepherds. There you go, not what you were expecting. Adrian Edmondson and the Bad Shepherds there with the Jam, the cover of the Jam standard, going underground. And that's especially for Marvin, because he wants us all to go underground. £4.5 billion, which he found on the back of the sofa on one of his trips abroad to go and see the Chinese people, or to maybe see go and see the New Yorkers, because obviously Bristol is a world capital and we deserve a transport network comparable with that of New York. Welcome back. It's Friday Politics with me, Billy Quain, broadcasting live on Bristol Community 93.2 FM across the city and worldwide on bcfmradio.com. I'm sitting in this week for Tony Gosling, who's on his Holly Halls, and I've got some traffic updates for you. At Banwell, the A368 Towerhead Road in both directions, very, very slow. Delays as traffic diverts around the closure of the A370 between Huish and Kongsbury. Brislington, the A4 Bath Road outbound, there's reports of slow traffic due to an accident between Winchester Road and Talbot Road at Down End. The A4174 Bristol Ring Road is busy but moving at the Bromley Heath roundabout. There are roadworks in the area. Surprise, surprise. Kongsbury, the B3133 in both directions in Somerset, and in Yatton, there is delays on the B3133. I'm really struggling to say that. Again, it's because of the diversions around the thing. And we've got something in Westbury on Trim, I've just noticed. Passage Road, slow traffic due to an accident between Passage Road and Shipley Road. That's in Westbury on Trim. And of course, the M32 is slow. And in Bath, London Road, A4 is very slow. But that's kind of standard procedure. There's also delays because of the digging up of the road on the A420. Temple May Underpass, Castle Street, running up towards Temple Meads because they're digging holes there. Bruce Williamson from Rail Future is here with Martin Summers and myself in the studio, and we're talking, trying to solve some of the transport problems that Bristol is facing at the moment. There doesn't appear to be any money, and now there is some talk of making a putting an extra road in,
yeah,
in South Bristol.
Well, you say
Southeast Bristol.
You say there isn't any money. One of the frustrating things for me as a train campaigner is that, you know, you always struggle to get rail schemes off the ground. Oh no, there's no budget for it. Can't find the money. And yet, when it comes to road schemes, somehow it's money no object. And these road schemes get forced through often in the face of huge local opposition. And the latest one we're going to have a row about in Bristol is the, I mentioned it in passing a moment ago, what's sometimes called the Brislington Greenway, sometimes known as the Callington Road Scheme. And it's a disused railway line.
Yes, but we should probably explain the geography of where this is to people.
Yeah.
If you go to the Sainsbury's at the Black Castle and you go up the way past the side and the rear of the store and head in a straight line from there to the Tesco at Brislington, that's pretty much what you're talking about.
Yeah, if you're taking the A4 as it is now, it goes sort of underneath or just behind the Lodecker pub and comes out in South Bristol. And I suppose it is part of the railway line that eventually went out towards Whitchurch and beyond. Now, you know, when Marvin is talking about new transport schemes and, you know, putting trains underground, obviously, I'm sure he does know that it's much, much, much cheaper to put them overground. And so where we have a section of potentially reusable rail line that might be able to be used for a future transport scheme that isn't roads, it makes sense to not build a road on it and force the railway underground at huge expense. And obviously, as I said before, you know, the road building just increases traffic, just increases pollution, it just induces demand, and it will get us nowhere. But for whatever reason, Bristol City Council and the West of England Combined Authority seem intent on ramming this scheme through. There is a petition which the if you search for Brislington Greenway, you'll find it. Unfortunately, the petition, it's run by the Liberal Democrats, and Liberal Democrats, I hope you're listening, I won't sign it, because when you sign the petition, it signs you up to get spammed by the Liberal Democrats, which
I think is
rather sneaky of them. There's not even an opt-out button, you know.
Oh, so that's good. And you know, the last time the Liberal Democrats signed a piece of paper, it took all of about 20 minutes of negotiation for them to turn their back on it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, nonetheless, obviously, I, as a transport campaigner who supports railways, or supports decent transport, in fact, you know, I oppose this. It's a stupid idea. I hope it doesn't get through, but I fear it will.
So what's going to happen with this? Because I had a quick look on an aerial photograph of the area in question.
Yeah.
Some of it's being used. There's a scrapyard entrance along part of the way of it.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a cutting, and it's a bit not of a cutting.
It doesn't
really go from anywhere to anywhere.
No, it's not a hugely long piece of I'm guessing it's only probably half a mile, maybe a mile tops, you know.
But,
you know, the options are to build a new road on it, you know, with all its attendant advantages and complete lack of gaining anything. It won't solve congestion. It will just move the congestion somewhere else. It will probably become congested itself and waste millions of pounds. Or it could be used for a possible future, you know, tram line or something, or make it into a cycle track, or make it into something that, you know, what these campaigners want to do is make it into a greenway, just a green hub in the heart of the city, which would be very nice. There's all sorts of possible uses for it, all of which are better than converting it into a road.
Okay. Aside from Liberal Democrats seizing control of this campaign, how does one, you know, voice their ire?
Well,
in
like
opposition,
I say, if you search for Brislington Greenway, you can talk to your councillors. You can maybe set up an independent campaign, or join one of the other many transport groups and environmental groups in Bristol that will be no doubt opposed to it, as well as the Lib Dems. You know.
Because Lib Dem group leader Gary Hopkins, I think, is one of the councillors for one of the wards that is likely to run through.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if his back garden backs onto it.
Well, that may have something to do with
it. Which is maybe why he doesn't want a road.
You're a real cynic. You know, I think there are genuine, you know, sincere reasons to oppose this. Well, but obviously, those who do live near it don't want a new road on their doorstep.
I realise that. But you say I'm a cynic. Gary Hopkins, I'm afraid for him, does have form with exercise, stamping his foot with the planning office after legitimate planning permission had been given to one of his neighbours.
Yeah.
And he had a bit of a hissy fit. All of a sudden, the planning was rescinded. Strangely. And then he still ends up as the group leader of the all eight Liberal Democrats in Bristol City Council. Good. We're going to take some more music because there's a whole bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about air quality.
Yep.
I want to talk to you about effective solutions that don't cost millions.
Right.
You know, this is lunacy. You know, shutting the libraries, getting rid of the lollipop men, paying chief executives from the council 7 months' salary just to not come to work after they'd only been in the job for 6 months, and then finding that we're stuck with Metrobus. Life's frustrating. It's Friday Politics. I'm Billy Quain, sitting in this week for Tony Gosling on Bristol Community 93.2 FM, broadcasting live across the city of Bristol and worldwide on bcfmradio.com. I was wondering, Bruce Williamson, because I know you have a little bit of radiophonic engineering chops as well.
Yeah.
Can they hear us on the International Space Station?
They probably have internet access.
Okay.
I think even if they were flying directly overhead, they probably wouldn't. But
so we're worldwide and slightly beyond the stratosphere as well.
Yeah.
Good. That's excellent. Welcome along, listeners on the International Space Station. Not encountering too many traffic problems up there, I imagine.
No.
Although there is talk about space junk being harvested and brought back to Earth or being dumped.
Yeah, I mean, space junk is a real problem. There was a thing a couple of years ago where two satellites collided and they just exploded. You know, they're travelling towards each other at like thousands of miles an hour. And as you can imagine, it's a big bang. And yeah, there are these millions of tiny pieces of metal, and in some cases not so tiny pieces of metal, floating around in the atmosphere. Well, beyond the atmosphere, rather. And they're a real hazard, potentially a real hazard to space travel and to satellite launches. And, you know, we've not seen any lives lost yet. So I think NASA tracks them all these bits of junk that are bigger than 10 centimetres apart. And I think also through international agreements, they're better at not allowing junk to exist in space anymore. They're better at making sure the satellites come back down to Earth at the end of their life or get chucked out into outer space.
Well, that's important because Elon Musk was launching satellites this week, rockets, and I'm sure Richard Branson is going to have another go at stratospheric transport and travel for the super rich at some stage. And it would be nice for that to go successfully and not kill too many people.
It would, yes. Let's wish them the best.
Well, it's important. No, we've highlighted some of the issues that Bristol is suffering from, struggling with. As I say, I had to ditch the car this evening and walk here because the traffic.
May I say, I took the train here and it was on time and it only took me 50 minutes from Clifton. There's no way I could have driven in that time, you know. So.
Yes, congratulations. So you are preaching what you practice.
Practicing what I preach, I think.
Indeed. Yeah, yeah. So maybe I should have done that because I could have picked up the Severn Beach line, not far from where I live on the other side of town. And that would have been one potential solution. Metrobus is due to open this year.
Yes.
Some of it.
Yes.
A bit of it.
Yes.
The uptake, I suspect, will be a lot of people having a go.
Yes. I'll be curious to ride on it myself.
Because it's the new thing.
It's the newfangled thing,
Do we know if it's running poo buses or diesel buses?
There's talk that they want to buy some poo buses, but right now it's diesel buses. It's conventional diesel buses.
Okay, so that's going to have a downward effect on Bristol's air quality again.
Yes, it will. Because they'll tell you that they're low emissions buses, and obviously, you know, engine technology does improve, and the latest diesel engines are very good in terms of, you know, filtering out all these nasty particles and so on. But I dare say you still smell them. They probably still give out a few PM10s and a few nitrous oxides and stuff, which is the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
PM10s are these microscopically tiny little bits of sooty carbon that are cancerous to breathe in. And petrol engines give them out too, but much less so. And do
poo buses spit them out?
Poo buses
as well?
Probably spit them out in much smaller amounts. I don't know for definite. I mean, poo buses run on gas, which generally burns a lot cleaner.
Mm-hmm. Well, should I point out gas that's created recycling facility at Avonmouth?
Yes,
Genico's creating local jobs and mitigating some of the environmental impact of Bristol's sewage on the Severn Basin.
Yes, it's very good, and more power to the robot. I would say as well that there are proposals for poo trains as well, because of course you can run a diesel train on gas, but I don't think there are actually any up and running as yet.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's something to ponder.
Do
poo trains versus electric trains. Had you your first Great Western time over again with this ridiculous fudge that we've now got partial electrification and partial diesel to get you into the stations, would you have opted for a poo solution, given the choice?
I would have opted. You see, the problem is Chris Grayling, who's the Transport Secretary, is
who's still in his job.
Amazingly,
I can't believe this.
Yeah. Okay. Electrification is great. We all love electrification, even though people don't like the overhead wires because they're not pretty. But they're, you know, electric trains are more reliable, they're greener, they're cheaper to buy, they're cheaper to run, they're faster, and so on. It's just win-win-win-win-win all around with electrification. And as a fudge, we have these new trains. I think they're actually the very first few are up and running already. These new Hitachi built intercity express trains, and they have electric power as well as diesel power. And Chris Grayling would have you believe that this is all newfangled and wonderful. We don't need electrification. We've got these newfangled bimodes. They run on diesel, they run on electric, everyone's a winner. Not quite so. Hybrids are nothing new. We've had combined diesel and electric trains running on Britain's rail network for some time in different capacities. The technology isn't really new. But the problem is you have either an electric train with extra weight on it, i.e. the diesel engines and generators, which are not being used when it's running under electric power, or you have a diesel train which is underpowered. It's a fudge. It's neither thing. You know, it's unsatisfactory in both regards. So what would be much better is to have pure electric trains which are lighter and more reliable. And, of course, you've got the increasing cost and complexity of having a diesel engine as well as all the electric gear as well. So the way forward is undoubtedly to electrify the whole route, and we want it to go a lot further. We want it to go certainly to Weston-super-Mare, maybe down towards Exeter in the longer term. Network Rail have bitten off more than they can chew in these massive electrification projects around the UK, the Great Western, the Midland, and so on. And, you know, it's fair enough that the government says, hang on a sec, this is getting a bit out of hand. Let's stop and solve the problem. But what they said is, let's stop and abandon it altogether, which is really a complete cop-out, which is, you know, very unsatisfactory, and we're not happy about it.
Okay, because, you know, to overspend a bit, we had Councillor Mark Wright in last week, and he said, you know, for any public service contract, generally you expect contingency of about 15%.
Right.
But to overspend by £2 billion and still only deliver one third of the job.
Yeah, it's not good.
No. Quantity surveying of the worst sort.
Yeah. And again, you know, both Network Rail are guilty here and the Department for Transport for not picking up on this sooner, really. They should have looked into it and made moves, you know, when the overspend started, not when the overspend really got out of hand. That really is sort of, what's the phrase, bolting the gate after the horse has bolted.
Yes.
Shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted, you know.
Okay, so we've got 3 minutes now to talk about solutions.
Okay.
Bruce Williamson, we've highlighted the problems, the issues, the traffic, the air quality, the lack of poo bus use, all of this stuff. What's the solution?
Well, there isn't.
Well, what's the affordable solution?
Well, there's no. I think we need to recognise that there's no magic bullet. But I think I would reinforce some of the things that I have said earlier, which we ought to recognise. You know, that firstly, that road building doesn't work. Secondly, that if you want to attract people out of their cars, it's got to be rail based because bus isn't very good at it. I'm not anti-bus by any means. Buses are great; they have a role to play. But if you put on a new rail route, it will attract passengers out of their cars. A new bus route won't do that, or won't do it anywhere near as well. So it has to be rail based, and that's why Metrobus will fail. And also, Marvin is proposing this massive new expansion of rail schemes in the city. You know, it's lovely to have these long-term aspirations, and if you look at it in that context, I'd say, yeah, well done, fair enough. But in the shorter term, we've got to look at what's achievable now. Let's fix what we've got. Let's expand what we've got. Let's get Portishead up and running. Let's get Henbury Loop up and running. Let's maybe get trains on the railway path here, although obviously that's going to be controversial. Let's also preserve those routes which might be available for use in the future and not build on them, because that is spectacularly short-sighted. But the government won't learn, you know. The amount of railway lines that have been lost under supermarkets and housing estates, it's just excruciatingly frustrating to look at the short-term stupidity of those decisions and of the stupidity of selling off these disused railway lines rather than mothballing them. But, you know, let's not make it any worse. And that would cost nothing. It costs nothing to say, no, you can't build on that. Build your supermarket somewhere else. Yet the government won't do it.
Okay.
There's a zero cost option.
You have painted a bleak picture.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think the other thing we need to recognise is that public transport is expensive. Transport is expensive generally. The economics are stacked very much in favour of roads and motorists and road building. I mean, motorists will often claim that they're paying more than, you know, they get out of it. But there are, again, this is one for Martin, really. It's about the what you call externalities, you know, the cost of treating people who have suffered with respiratory diseases through road pollution isn't passed on to the motorist. Railway, the cost of policing the roads isn't passed on to the motorists, but the railways have to pay for the British Transport Police out of the railway budget. You know, those are the sort of disparities that rail is up against. And if you know, and I speak as a motorist, but I mean, if motorists were forced to pay the full cost of what they cost society, then it would be a lot more expensive.
Okay, you've got 30 seconds. The sainted Tim Kent was the Liberal Democrat controller of traffic policy from 2010 onwards at Bristol City Council. What have you got to say to him?
No comment.
Really? That's very diplomatic of you, Mr. Williamson.
I'll leave you to lay the boot in, but no, I don't have. What's the old saying? If you don't have anything good to say about anything, best to say nothing.
Yeah, you've been talking to my grandmother. Thank you very much, Bruce Williamson. It's time for the news at 7. We're back with Annika Sutcliffe, Martin Summers, and All Things Green after 7.
This is Bristol's BCFM on 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.